This morning I have with me Ralph Hunt, who has been in the grocery business in Alliance for many years and his father before him. And this is what we want to talk about, some of his impressions of the business growing up in it, his father before him, and some of the stories that he can remember from his background. Okay, when did you get started in the grocery business, Ralph?
Well, I guess I've been in the grocery business the biggest part of my life, if you want to consider the time that I helped my father, and that was probably from the time I was in first grade.
All right, so as far as your life in Alliance is concerned, it's been tied up in the grocery business. When did your father start? You mentioned he had a grocery business.
Well, he originally had a store down at the corner of Patterson and Webb, which at that time, in 1911, was one of the better sections of town.
Right.
And he was in an independent store there, and like all independent stores in those days, they were the kingpins of the grocery business because we didn't have any chain stores in the area at the time.
How did he get started? He just started as a young man?
He started as a young man. He bought a little business down there. And actually, Dad said he was too young to be in business because he only lasted 3 years. He was too generous with credit, and that led to his downfall. But in 1911, the grocery business was pretty simple in a lot of ways. They did make deliveries, and he told me that he made his first deliveries in a horse and wagon. But then he had the first Model T delivery truck in the city of Alliance. He bought this old Model T. I have a picture of it in this truck at home. And so that was something new in the grocery business, to have a delivery truck.
And particularly, I imagine, with the muddy streets at that time.
Oh, yeah, that's right. In fact, he said when they had heavy snows, that truck wouldn't cut it. They still had to go on a horse and wagon, you know. The trucks just weren't built to go through those snows that they had at that time.
Now, did your father grow up in Alliance, or did he come here from someplace
else? No, he came here. Actually, he spent his youth in Bergholz, Ohio.
Oh, on the hills.
And his father worked for the railroad, and of course, at that time, Alliance was quite a railroad town, and so Grandpa Hunt came up here, and Dad came up here too, and they made their home down on Webb Street. And of course, it was natural for Dad to open a grocery store in that area because he knew all the people down that way. But then he was in that store for about 3 years, he told me, from 1911 to 1914, and the things that I told you led to his downfall then, so we got out of the grocery business. But about 1925, he got back into business for the AMPT company in one of their small stores.
Now, this was in Alliance?
In Alliance on Arch Street. Mm-hmm. Now, what a lot of people don't know about the AMP, at one time they had 9 stores in the city of Alliance.
9 stores?
It was kind of a neighborhood type store. We'd have a little store on the corner. Mm-hmm. And at that time, they made quite an impact on the grocery business because up until then, the independents more or less had their own way in the grocery business. And they charged high prices, made a good markup on food. Of course, the corporate chain came in and they changed this because they were able to buy in quantities and they had their own labels. They canned their own vegetables and fruits, and they bought in quantities as far as the fresh meats and fresh vegetables, and of course they began to cut prices. And this really hurt the independent grocer.
Now, did these stores, the A&P stores at that time, were they a cash? Did they sell for cash?
Oh, no, they were strictly cash.
Yeah, no credit.
Never did give credit. Uh-huh. Never did give delivery.
Yeah.
It was strictly a cash and carry operation. But as I say, there was 9 A&Ps in town at one time. There was 3 on Main Street.
That's just hard to believe.
Yeah, there was one up by the present Mountain Union Bank a branch on Main Street at 117. And then there was one down at the corner of Arch and Main, where the shoe store is, right diagonal from Midland Buckeye.
Yes.
And there was one down in the lower end of Main Street, about where the Superior
wallpaper
and paint store is now. And there were 2 on Arch Street. What about where the old Rat Center Market is now, and what up where Jay's stands on the corner of Grant and Arch? There's one over on Haynes Avenue at the corner of Haynes and Oxford. There's another one on Haynes down at the corner of a Market and Haynes. Oh, they were all over town. Over on Liberty, the corner of Summit and Liberty.
The real,
just a lot of small stores.
The neighborhood type grocery.
Right. Now, they opened the first supermarket right where the present Mount Union Bank building is now. It was a supermarket. The bank building was on a corner in a small room, and then the MP was right next to them. That was their first self-serve market in the city. That wasn't the first self-serve market in the city, because the old Persky store in Mount Union was the first self-serve market. But then the AMP opened their self-serve store there. I worked there in the summertime when I came home from college.
Oh, I see.
And it was a unique experience then in those days to work. I worked as a cashier because there wasn't anything in the store was marked as far as price. The price was underneath the item on the shelf, so the customer knew what it was. But when they came up to the checkout with it, you had to remember the price. And that wasn't easy. I used to take a crayon and go back whenever I had time, and some of the hard to remember items, I'd put a price on the top till I learned it. You know? But and then that was their first self-serve market, and then they built a second one down on Main Street, in the block where the present Kroger store is now.
Oh yes.
Then years later, they closed that one up and they moved up on Arch Street. You probably remember that, where the Goodwill store is.
Right,
yeah. Yeah, before they went down to the plaza.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's a little bit of the history of the AMPs. I'm familiar with that because my dad worked for them for so many years. But he ended up at the corner of Liberty and Summit. They had a small store there. And when they closed that store, they gave their managers the option to buy. They eventually began closing all these little neighborhood stores.
Oh, yes.
So they gave their managers the option to buy all the equipment for like $100.
By God.
You know, they were pretty good to their old managers. That, well, not if we're going to close the store. If you want to buy the equipment, start in for yourself. It's up to you for $100. So the AMP closed on Saturday night, and I had two brothers, myself and my dad and a couple other people. We had a truckload of groceries in there. On Sunday morning, we got our shelves stocked, and Dad opened up on Monday morning, never lost a day's business, and that's how he started as an independent again.
Oh, yes. So this would be about what year?
This was about 1940, and then he stayed in business there as an independent for 20 years before he retired.
Mm-hmm.
So as I say, I grew up in the grocery business myself, because when I was in the first grade and Dad had the AMP over on Arch Street, I used to get pretty mad if he didn't save the soap on the bottom shelf for me to put up. You know, I can go from school on the shelf. He said he never wanted me to be a grocery guy. He said it was easier ways to make a living. But I went to college, ran out of money, came home, and after a stint in the service, I did about the only thing I knew to do, which was the food business. My first store was up in Mount Union. Right across from the present Shell station there. There's a little building. It was a barber shop after I moved out. When I bought that little business from Mr. Dixon, and was there for 5 years before I moved out on State Street. But the thing that has happened in the grocery business, as I said, there were many good independents in town, you know, in the early 20s. A lot of stores. I think at one time there were 6 stores on Main Street, different independents. I know there were 3 in Mount Union. I was thinking Mr. Maple had a store up there. Yes. Floyd Senn, who was later mayor of City of Alliance, had one. Ted Hopp had one. It was called Quality Market.
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Dixon had the store that I bought. But then the change came in and the involvement of the supermarkets, and they just slowly drove the small independents out of business. But then we had a resurgence of independence because they joined associations. We have started cooperatives where, like, I belong to a cooperative now, and there's 175 of us own our own warehouse. We hire the help that run it. And if there's any profit made at the end of the year, of course, it's returned to us. Well, we're able to buy groceries now just as cheap as the chains. In fact, out through the West, there's a lot of the chains are buying from cooperatives such as we have here in Ohio.
Now, your cooperatives, what's the name?
Associated Grocers.
Associated.
Yeah, we're down at Yorksville, Ohio. And the business has just grown by leaps and bounds. We're serving from Lewis, from Yorksville, Ohio. We're going as far east as Pittsburgh. We're going south into West Virginia, Charleston. We're going west out into Ashland, Ohio, all from this one warehouse in Yorksville. And, it's the only Salvation Army there, really. So there's been a big change. The independents are now coming back. There's a lot of good independent supermarkets. And some of the chains are really hurting because they're caught up in the spiral of really high wages. And, of course, with the corporate structure and all the corporation heads, they're overhead and just really, really hurting them. AMP particularly has closed many, many stores. And they're having a heck of a time making a profit. And you know, the grocery business operates on about 1.5 to 2% net at the end of the year. If you look at that, you feel pretty good about it. Mm-hmm. And so the independents have came back. There's no doubt about that. Of course, right in the last now, we have one independent that's doing more business than any of the chains, you know.
Yes.
And we have others that are just right up there, too. So there's been the change. You had the chains come in and hurt the independents, and the independents got wise and got together, and now they're coming back again.
But of course, there's another feature in addition to that. I'm sure it comes through all right. And that is the personality and the know-how of the individual who's running the business. And this is so true, it doesn't matter much, you know, what, whether it's a hot dog stand or whether it's sort of a haberdashery or what, but this makes a big difference. And you can have an independent who starts out and it just doesn't go. You've done a flourishing business, or at least to my way of thinking, you do a very fine business. And it's personality of the individual and a certain know-how that goes with it, and this makes a success.
Well, I think this is true, and I think this is one thing that's hurt to change, too. They have had a very impersonal and cold attitude, and I think you'll find this in most chain stores. But where you have an individual that, you know, this is his livelihood, he's not just drawing a paycheck, he has to keep that business going. Yeah. You know, he's going to go all out, he's going to have his people going all out to create a friendly atmosphere and try to give that extra service that you don't get in a chain store.
Well, I appreciate that. I stop in your business often, and if I don't see you, it's your wife or at least one of the clerks that I know, and you appreciate this. Everything is a number. It's so impersonal in so many other places today, and you appreciate this bit of warmth. It makes a difference.
That's right. Well, and another thing, too, you know, you go into a chain store, and for some reason, people hesitate to ask for special favors, where they'll come into an independent and they'll say, look, Ralph, I'm having a special party, and I need a special cut of meat this weekend, and you know, they know that we're going to do our best to take care of them. That's the big difference. Of course, I'm probably one of the few stores left that deliver in the City of the Lights. I think maybe there's one other one now. And also give credit. You know, we have a lot of monthly accounts, which to me is good business because we try to be very selective and we give credit too. But once you get the customer buying a credit, get them get that pattern established, you feel that you get a big part of their business, and carrying the accounts from month to month is not that much of a burden if you know you're going to get your money, you know, at the end of the month. And it's good, steady business. Delivery business does cost a lot of money, but on the other hand, sometimes you feel like it's almost public service. You have a lot of these old people that can't get out, and once they get older, sometimes they get to be a little bit of a problem. but on the other hand, you feel like you're doing something for them.
Right. So, what you're saying is that a part of your business, at least, is done by telephone. People don't even come to the store.
A lot of it's done by phone. Like on weekends, maybe on like Fridays and Saturdays, we'll put out 50 or 60 orders each day, you know, just on deliveries. Mm-hmm. And it's a good steady business. It keeps my help busy all the time. They're not out front waiting on trade. They're back there working orders. And I really get a lot of mileage out of my help. They don't stand around any time.
What would you say the orders by telephone, do you think this has remained steady? Has it increased, say, 30 years ago?
Well, let's see. Let me think a little bit about that. I would say probably we're doing a little bit more business by telephone than we were like 20 years ago. But the big change I've noticed in my business is in the last few years, we have an awful lot of strange faces in that store that we never saw before. Whereas a few years ago, like 10 years ago, it was more or less all pretty much a regular clientele. We don't have that anymore. We have people coming up from Sebring and Beloit and even Minerva and Louisville. And I think mainly because most of the supermarkets handle packaged meat anymore.
Yes.
In fact, I didn't really realize this until I went down and saw one of my friends down at one of the chain stores a few months ago, but everything they get anymore comes in pre-cut. Whereas, you know, you used to get a side of beef in and you process it right there at the store. This is all done at the warehouse now, and in comes their steaks are cut, and even their ground beef is ground and put into cryovac packages, and all they'll do is open it up and regrind it one time, you know. And it's just a complete change in grocery business. Even their hams are cut. You know, you think a butcher could cut a ham, but even their hams are cut, and their ham slices. Everything is pre-cut in the chains anyway. The reason for this, of course, is to cut down on their overhead. Yeah. They can have one guy doing this at warehouse level, cutting the same thing day after day after day, and a big supermarket now only has to have a couple butchers because all they have to do is get it out, put it in the case, and package it. So that's the big change in my business. I have had so many people that we never saw before coming and buying meat. The meat business has been
I suppose.
Just tremendous.
Now, when you started out, did you do meat? It was a combination of grocery and meat?
Right, right.
Of course, in early years, this was a distinction. There were just grocery stores and just meat markets.
That's right.
But
now
you've had a combination.
Right. Well, of course, you had to. It just seemed like people wanted the one-stop shopping. They didn't want to go one place for grocery, one place for meat. And the meat market, as a meat market, just gradually disappeared. And I can remember when there were two real, real good meat markets on Main Street, just selling meat alone. And but when they can go to one place and get everything, you know, that's what the people want today. You know, we were talking about profit in the grocery business. That's been another big change in the business, is the involvement of the supermarket with all the different departments in. The tendency's been the present grocery store, the present markets today, to give the dry groceries away and make a very gobble profit on those, and make your profit in your specialty departments, like the big supermarkets have the deli departments there.
Yes.
And of course what people pay for that stuff is amazing, but where you have the wife that's working at the second job, they want something quick and many times, you know. A lot of the younger people don't really know how to cook anymore.
Yeah.
And so they make their money in their deli departments, they make it in their meat departments, they make it particularly in their produce departments, and they have the drug racks, even they process film, you know. So they can give the groceries away as long as they can pick up that extra. After all, they have that big overhead. They have to make it somewhere, you know. And
you do just a bit with the delicatessen, not a big spot there. You have
I don't have the room really.
Yes.
You know.
But you do with the bakery. You have a very fine bakery department there.
Right.
Now you added that when?
Well, I put that in about 10 years ago. Just built on a little addition so I could put that bakery in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you can just have a couple outstanding things, and they do, like they bake an outstanding pie.
Oh, they do.
So we have them coming in just for those. Well, once you get them in the store, you'll sell them something.
Sure.
So we have a We've done a real good job of that little bakery, too.
That's it, yes. That's a very fine feature.
It's helped a lot. You know, another thing, you're talking about changes in business, so I can remember when I first started working for Dad, when I was in high school, really, and everything had to be weighed in those days, you know. Sugar came in, you weighed it up. Coffee came in, you weighed it up. We even weighed up bulk butter, and you weighed up lard, and you weighed up beans, and there were very few things, you know, came in packages and that kind of stuff. You had bulk tea, and it was, you just spent like a couple days a week just weighing things up. And things were so simple, you know, you had maybe like about 6 or 8 kinds of cereal, mm-hmm. compared with about 50 or 50, well, no, there must be 100 different kinds now if you wanted to carry them all, you know. And you'd have maybe 1 or 2 brands of coffee. There weren't any cake mixes in those days, mm-hmm. you know, as we know about.
Yeah.
Of course, frozen food didn't really come on the market until the 30s. Started with a few vegetables and then, you know what the frozen food business is today. I mean, you can get everything, a complete meal if you want it. Not the greatest, but it's there.
Yeah. It's so convenient.
The items, every year, the items just keep increasing and increasing and increasing. And, you know, it's always a problem to try to find space for these new things.
Yeah.
But one thing I know the warehouses have done anymore, they do everything by computer. And if they don't sell so many cases of an item in a month, they just discontinue carrying it.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you people come in and they'll say, gee, where's this old favorite of mine at? Well, I'm sorry, but you're one of the few people that bought it, so they're not selling it anymore. And they find this hard to believe, you know.
I'm sure.
It has to be that way. You know, with so many new items, you just can't keep putting more and more in a warehouse or in a store.
You pay for an inventory.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
And you've got to keep it moving.
That's right.
Well, that's been another big change, is the number of items in the business. It's just unbelievable, you know, what they have come out with in the last few years.
Well, now, you said you had a little store at Mount Union, then you moved out on State Street. What year was that, Ralph?
Well, I actually started in business for myself in 48, and I moved out. I stayed there 5 years in that old building in Mount Union, and it was an old building, but we did business in that old building. And then I went out in 53, I went out to Hillcrest and bought that market from an old gentleman by the name of Joe Fratoni, and we put an addition on it right away when we bought it, and that was in 53, so gosh, I've been out there for 23 years, uh-huh. It don't seem possible.
Now, was the name Hillcrest Market when you first went out?
No, I just named it that. I call it Hillcrest.
But I mean, from the time you started, you
called
it Hillcrest.
Yes, right.
Now, one other feature I wanted to discuss with you or talk about, you know, years ago a farmer used to think he had to have a large family in order to get everything done on the farm. At least this was a help. Mechanization now helps. You don't have to have quite the number of hired men, and I don't know how familiar you are, but I come from farther south and farm country, and I can remember when a prosperous farmer would have 2 and 3 hired men, and if he had a large family, so much the better. Now, members of your family have helped. It's been a family enterprise in a way,
right.
too, hasn't it?
That's right. And I think that's been real good for my kids in many ways. That's one thing I've said has been a plus being in business, because they've all helped from the time they were in high school, and it's been good experience for them meeting the public. And another thing, it's been good for them income-wise. They always had some money.
Yeah.
And when they when they got ready to go to college, they can help a little bit with their education. And of course, they all went to college.
Yeah.
And plus the fact that I think it just developed them so many ways, their personality and being able to get out and meet the public. And of course, it's helped me, because I know that I had somebody that was interested. It was their livelihood as well as mine.
Sure.
You know? And even now, even after the kids are married, boy, they zip out there, and if we're busy, boy, they dig right in.
Yeah, I know. I've seen, you know, surprise. There's Nancy behind the counter helping out when you're in the pinch.
She came out before New Year's, and we were just, you know, overwhelmed with customers, and she dug right in. I said, you'll learn not to come out before a holiday. But she enjoys it. They still like the business.
Right.
That part's been real good, you know.
Yeah. Well, now, are you, as you look ahead, you think there's going to be a third-generation Hunt continue on this?
Not really. I've never, of course, I'm like my dad. I never really encouraged him to take part in the business as far as a career. And right now, I have a young fellow in with me on a 10-year program that's going to take the business over in 10 years. And the rest of my family is pretty well set as far as their careers. And,
mm-hmm.
So really, I think the Hunts are going to get out of the grocery business finally.
Finally, you've had to take your father's advice on that.
Yeah,
right?
Finally. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, it's really a dog-eat-dog job. It's not only the, of course, I go to work at 7 in the morning, quit at 6 at night, and I do take a day off a week, which is like today, but it's not only the work you put in at the store, you put in a lot of hours at home, too.
Yes,
we do all our own book work and all our own payroll, and of course they could hire it done, but
then you had to the overhead on that.
That's right. I had training in accounting in college, so mm-hmm. I mean it's not hard for me to do, but it is time
consuming.
It's
time consuming, yeah.
And if you go out in the evening, you come home at midnight if you're out, why then you got your money to balance up before you go to bed. It's always there, you know, so it's very time consuming. But on the other hand, it's been a very enjoyable experience. I had so many nice people that's done business with me, and we've watched their families grow up, and I've had a lot of young people. In fact, I've usually hired not even college people in many cases to work for me. I've watched those kids grow up. We have a couple lawyers that work for me, and my girl's going to be a doctor, and you know, it's been real interesting to watch them too.
Several times when I've talked with you, you've mentioned some of the amusing anecdotes. I remember one, it's around Christmas time when a woman early in the morning routed you out of bed, forgot to get her turkey and all. Do you want to reminisce a bit about some of those aspects of the business, Ralph?
You know, I just thought about some of the humorous things, but I really can't think of too many things. I don't know. That was probably, it was humorous, but it wasn't humorous to
me. Yeah, that's right.
That particular time, I would.
But you,
I was
more
shocked than anything else.
Do you want to recount that we have it for the record?
As you know, when you're a father and you have a family, why at Christmas Eve you stay up like at 3 or 4 in the morning, you're putting the toys together and getting things together. You know, we got to bed about 4, and at 5:30 the phone rang. And this was a gal that she's remotely related to me, never been in my store. 5:30, she said, "Ralph, I wonder if you'd go out and get me some heavy-duty aluminum foil. My husband will meet you out there. I'm ready to cook my turkey, and I don't have any foil." And after an hour and a half sleep, I couldn't believe what I was hearing. And, you know, like I said, sure, I'll go out. And by the time I got out there, I was waking up. I wasn't too good of humor about it. it was funny in a sense, you know, that she called me. But, we have had some things that's been amusing different times in the store. Some of the people, it's amusing, but still it makes you mad, you know.
It's customer relations.
They'll bring back an item to the store, and they'll say, "Oh, I bought this here, and it's not any good." And you look at the stamp on it, it's from some other market.
Yes.
You run into this every once in a while. And then you get some of these old people that get so confused about, they'll call up and they'll say, "Well, I haven't got my order today." And I'll say, "Well, just a minute, we'll check through here, and we'll check," and they never call them on it. They just think, you know, "Well, I called that order in," but they never did. We run into things like that. Some of the old people are amusing. It's pathetic in a sense, but some of the things they do. And then they'll have their favorite people. They won't give their order to anybody but a certain person.
Oh.
They'll call up and they'll ask for one of the girls. If they're busy, "Oh, well, I'll wait," you know.
Yeah.
And, of course, if they're not working that day, "Well, I'll call them tomorrow," you know. They want that personal touch. So. But I'll tell you. Over the years, we've had some wonderful people dealing with us, and the occasional one that gives you a little problem, you don't really think that much about it, because there's been some very nice people.
It's
been rewarding that way, too. We've made a lot of friends over the years in the business.
I'm sure. What about the return of merchandise? This any incidents that you can remember about that that would be, I suppose, aggravating at the time, but the humorous as you look back on it.
Well, I don't think there's a Thanksgiving goes by. This is the first year at Thanksgiving, and the first year at Christmas, I haven't had a call from somebody that says, "Ralph, what am I going to do my turkey spoil?" So I usually say, "Well, why don't you bring it out to the store and we'll check it over," you know. And the way they package turkeys today, they cryovac them in a cryovac package, and sometimes some of the blood is in that package, you know, and it will develop a little bit of an odor, you know, and they'll open that up and it just hits them and they say, "Oh, my turkey's spoiled." And so what we do, we take it out, we wash it off, and then we'll say, "Now you check it out," you know. But it is disturbing.
Yeah.
Christmas morning, Thanksgiving, and you get that call, and then you go out there. Of course, there's nothing about it. But they, and sometimes, you know, I've had people say, "Well, I don't feel right about it," you know. Say, "Well, gee, I don't know what else to tell you to do. I don't have another one to give you unless you want me to give you a frozen one and you can thaw it out and have your dinner later today." But this has happened. Sometimes they won't tell you. They won't accept it.
Yeah.
That's been kind of an aggravating thing at times. But people are funny. And of course, I always say to them, "Look, if you don't feel right about it, it's your holiday dinner. Don't use it. I'd rather not have anything that you know." But these things happen. But this year was a perfect year. It didn't happen.
It's fine. It's fine. Of course, we don't have shortages now as we had earlier times. You went through coupon, the ration bit, and then I imagine when you started up right after the war there were times when you couldn't get certain items. Sure. It's what they call stoop merchandise, this sort of thing. Do you have any experience with that you can recall?
Well, of course, I was in the service myself, but before I went, I didn't go until 44, so when the war actually started in late 41, as you know. And so 42 and 43, those shortages started to develop, and I can remember Dad would get in a shipment of soap. That was one of the critical items, you know, and you just put it in the back room. You wouldn't put it on the shelf, and anything that was short, you put in the back room, and if your customers came in, you know, you took care of them.
Yes.
And, of course, you always had the strangers running around all over town looking for this stuff. You know, of course, you know, they weren't going to get it at the regular independent store. If there was 25 cases back, they wouldn't guess. But this was a problem. That beet really got to be a problem. I think you can remember how beet was. It was. We had this one little packing house outside of town here that was breaking all the laws as far as rationing goes and what they were allowed to kill, and they were just, you know, and they were doing a land office business. And it was really about the only place you could get any meat. And I know my dad would go out there at 4 o'clock in the morning and stand in line, and they, you know, you just take anything they give you, and you'd pay any price they ask, because you had to have a little meat for your customers. And that they really kept this time going as far as meat goes. And by his own admission, the gentleman that ran that place, I don't know why I should call him the gentleman, not because he was a lawbreaker, but he made $250,000 in that little packing house one year selling black market meat.
Why?
But, you know, if you wanted it, you would have got it. And I suppose you were maybe as guilty as they were by buying it. But on the other hand, here's your customers coming in. Well, you know, I mean, so you feel like, well, gee, you know, I'm trying to take care of them. And that was one of the most critical things, that meat situation. And right at the time the war started, Dad was buying from a wholesaler over in Canton, Ohio. A couple of good Jewish fellas, Bloom and Clyde.
Oh, yes.
And they were nice Jewish people. And, you know, they were smart. And they said to Dad, "Look, put everything you can in the basement in the way of canned vegetables and canned fruits. Just, we'll send a couple truckloads over. So don't worry about paying for it, you know. When you get the money, you'll pay for it, but you'll be glad you have it." So they filled up Dad's basement over at that little store at the corner of Liberty and Sun. And Dad had things long, long, long after a lot of these other stores. And what happened, too, you know, like an item that was a can of beans, that was a critical item, for example, was baked beans. Can of beans that were sold for 10 cents went up as high as a quarter, you know, so you more than doubled your money on that kind of merchandise. Mm-hmm. Plus the fact that you had it for the trade. And there was a lot of money to be made in the grocery business at that time, if you were smart enough to buy it and had a place to put it, right? And of course, the same thing developed a little bit later during the Korean War, to a limited extent. Mm-hmm. Not as much as World War II, but...
Some shortages.
Yeah, because I was living up on Shunk at the time, and I had a little store at Mount Union, and I filled my basement up with canned goods. And it was... there was some opportunities and to make some money and still at the same time have merchandise which other people didn't have. Yeah. It wasn't, you weren't taking advantage of your customer, you were just taking advantage of the market.
Yes.
You know? And it was a good opportunity. And but you know, you talk about shortages and not being able to get things. And right now, a lot of people don't realize it, but the supply of certain kinds of meat, very difficult right now. We used to have a couple good local packers here. We don't have them anymore. Fairmount Provision went out of business. And we had a little one down here on State Street called Supreme Provision. Of course, we had Barnes Provision out here. So now you depend on everything from Canton, usually like Superior or Sugardale, which are the two big ones over there. Of course, there's some other ones come in here, but they mainly do the big part of the business in this area now. So you place an order with them, for example, for maybe 50 pork loins, and sometimes you'll get 20, sometimes you'll get 30, sometimes you won't get any. And then you have to shuffle and try to see where you can find some, you know. And it's been real difficult the last year. It really has. Just for example, I didn't get one pork loin yesterday. I didn't have any pork chops in my store all day. So then I'm on the telephone. When are we going to get them? Why are you going to send them? And it's just been like that for about the last year. It just seemed like continually they mark things out. And the supply of pork particularly has been very, very tight. And that's the reason the prices have been so high. And so we still run into some shortages. And the same way with the dry groceries, it's amazing that certain items will be out like for a period of a month or so before and can't seem to keep up with production anymore in some areas. I don't know why it is, whether the demand is so great anymore or what the problem is. But the whole concept there of supply has changed too, because where you had many, many, many companies in the dry grocery business, they keep getting swallowed up by the big ones. Procter & Gamble has just taken over so many different things. Borden Company is a big, big name in the food business anymore. And Beatrice Foods is another one. If you check the labels on your cans anymore, you would be surprised how many items have come from maybe three or four different sources.
Just the large.
Right. They keep swallowing up the small companies. And you know, another thing they do, the grocers get a little upset about this. They'll put these new products on the market. That might be a product you don't really want to put in your store at all, but they plug that on television for months ahead of time, and they create the demand before they even come in to sell you. They'll test market in an area, you know, and by the time they come in to sell you that product, you've had people in there asking for it, and you got to put it in whether you want it or not. So that's the way this thing works anymore. The giants in the business have just created that demand. And,
one other aspect along that line, a little differently, I noticed the Small Business Administration, the businessmen in that, have been plaguing the Ford administration to give a little favorite treatment or... at least to lighten the load for the small businessman, that the restrictions and government forms and all, by the time you fill those out and take care of all of that, you don't have time to do business. What is your reaction, or how do you, or do you want to say?
Well, course, you know, it gets more difficult every year as far as forms. Originally, we had our government withholding and our Social Security, federal old age benefit to fill out. And then, of course, they added state unemployment, and then they added state income tax, and now we have a federal unemployment form to fill out. And then, of course, now we have the city tax, which we didn't have a few years ago, and where we used to fill out a couple forms at the end of every year, now we've got a half a dozen to fill out. According to law now, you're supposed to keep a record of any injuries in your store and what caused them, the treatment, and so on. This is another thing that's supposed to be a part of your permit records. And year by year, they just, this is the truth, they keep adding on. And another thing that's really plagued the grocers and the food business has been inspection by Federal Department of Agriculture, State Department of Health, which I'm not saying is not good, yes. but I think some of the things they are so picky about that are just little things that they just continually harass anybody in the food business anymore. I know my competitor up there built a brand new big market, and they were in there just picking the thing apart, you know, and things like this. And you think a brand new store, you know, everything should be in pretty good shape. And of course, that's what closed up our one packer here in town, Fairmount Provision. You know, the funny part about it was his product had the lowest bacteria count in the state of Ohio. But they closed him up because it was an old building, and they wanted to make repairs and things like to the tune of $500,000, which he just simply could not afford to do, and he just gave up, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that sometimes inspection is just a little bit too rigid, and maybe just a little bit too unreasonable. This is the one thing that bothers me more than anything. Mm-hmm. The government forms, you know, sure, you get more of them all the time, but you can fill them out. They don't really harass me that much, but some of these things of inspection are just almost unreasonable anymore. And the thing about it is those people have the authority, you know, when they come in your store, whether they know as much about the business or not as they should, by golly, they can make it rock for you.
This is true. Well, it's been, I suppose, as you look back, a tremendous change when you started working for your father and where you are today, as you look back over those years on that.
I'll tell you, there's going to be a lot bigger changes in the future, too. I think there'll always be room for a good, small, independent. I feel that way. In fact, if I didn't feel that way, I wouldn't be training this young fellow I am now to take my store over, because that wouldn't be fair to him. But I really feel there'll always be a place for a small, good, independent grocer. And there's going to be some tremendous changes in the business. You're going to see electronic cash registers where you just pass the item under what they call an electric scanner, and everything will be recorded on the register. You won't have the key punching. You won't be punching the registers anymore. The ordering is already being done that way. Product codes are placed on the shelves, and they go through with an electric scanner. This is recorded on a tape, and this is put right in the equipment that transfers that message right to the warehouse. And there'll be some tremendous changes. And particularly, as I said, at warehouse level, there'll be more things all the time that are going to be done at warehouse level that come into the store, and there'll be less preparation as far as selling to the consumer. And of course, this is the answer if you can cut the overhead, you know. So I think there'll be a lot of big changes in the business. I would hate to see the metric system come in, and it's going to come. Yeah. You know, this is one thing that's always bugged me. If I can get out of it, but it's coming. We know that, and it's going to make a difference in all your recipes. It's going to make a difference in the way meat. I mean, you're going to have to change the whole concept, you know, of how you sell things.
I remember back home when I was a boy. A couple there, Pop and Mom Motter, who ran a store, and Pop always had a cigar in his mouth, and when you went in to buy cheese, there was a big wheel on table with a piece of cheesecloth over it, but he had a big knife, and he didn't object to winding it on his corduroy trouser and cutting a slice like that, you know. And I suppose those days are gone forever.
Yeah, that's right.
Although there are some. Testing 1, 2, 3, 4. I suppose the overhead would be too great to go back to this type of merchandising, but there's some people, and you probably feel this too, it's just a reaction against being a big wheel on a table with a piece of cheesecloth over it, but he had a big knife, and he didn't object to winding it on his corduroy trouser and cutting a slice like that, you know. And I suppose those days are gone forever.
Yeah, that's right.
Although there are some. Testing 1, 2, 3, 4. I suppose the overhead would be too great to go back to this type of merchandising, but there's some people, and you probably feel this too, it's just a reaction against being a number and having everything just so automated.
Right.
You'd like it back to a little more simplicity,
right.
Whether you can ever do that in the grocery business again.
Well, let's put it this way. Any market like that would be a novelty, and it would be the type of place they would make for a couple or three items, but not to do their total shopping either.
Not a volume of business.
Yeah, it would be the type of thing, it would be a novel operation. I guess they had an old-fashioned meat market like that up around, I think it's in the Hudson area, somebody told me about.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't been up to see it, but the butchers are just like the old-fashioned butchers. They have their regular meat cases. And I guess it's kind of an old-type operation, but the prices they tell me are just unbelievable.
Oh, they would have to be, yes.
They wouldn't necessarily have to be, but I think these people maybe are taking the advantage of the novelty of the thing, you know, and making a higher markup on the. But I'm going to go up sometime. I know one of my customers said, oh, they had the most beautiful rib roast up there, Ralph. And I said, we checked the price on it. It was $3 and something a pound, you know. I think we were selling rib roast for about $1.89 at the time. They said it was beautiful. But the price, and they said, you know, the funny part was some of those people were just buying that stuff like it was regular, you know. So it would have to be a novelty type of operation.
You'd pay for nostalgia at that point.
Oh, yeah. I can see where it'd be kind of fun to have that kind of a kind of an operation, you know, I don't think it would ever be a volume type thing, you know.
Well, now, in addition to groceries, you have other lines. I can buy mouthwash and shaving lotion and gloves and other items like this. When did this start coming in, the non-grocery type product?
Well, that started really about the time that the supermarket started, where they put in these additional items to try to make it more of a one-stop shopping operation, and of course also to make more profit, you know, the more items you get in there. And like I say, if you give the dry groceries away, then you have to make the profit somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when the drug department started, houseware departments, soft goods, hosiery, towels, that type of thing, you know. Anything to make a dollar, you know, that's the idea of it. And, you know,
what's
the overhead's there, and
yeah.
If you got to make it somewhere. If you don't make it on one thing, you got to pick it up somewhere else.
What's your temptation at this point, I'm sure you've thought of it, to buy to the left or the right of you and put on an additional wing, and then you can put in more areas like this?
At my age, the temptation's gone. No, I should have made the move 20 years ago. When I went out there, I've been a very cautious person. I've never gotten it over my head, and always just did what I felt I could handle.
Mm-hmm.
And I should have built a bigger market when I went out there, probably. On the other hand, when you get into a bigger type operation, then you have to deal with labor unions.
Yes.
And you have headaches too, you know. Maybe you don't work as hard. You do more supervision, mm-hmm. and you hire people to do more of the work. That part's good, but I have the land here. I do have that property next to me there, and well, I bought it because I thought maybe someday I would do mm-hmm. something with it. But when I started the business, I had practically no capital, and everything I made, and raising a family, you know, yeah. five, and trying to educate them, and so I never had a lot of money for expansion, and I never felt like I wanted to go too far out on a limb. And,
mm-hmm.
It's been a good, rewarding business, you know. As I say, if I would have made the move 20 years ago, that was when to do it. But now I've got about 10 years to go, and what the heck, if this young fellow that's in there wants to do it someday, that's up to him. And in fact, we talked about it. I've given him some ideas, mm-hmm. and he may do it, you know. I say, mm-hmm. gee, you know, I think it's a tremendous location. You know,
that
State
is.
Street anymore. Yes. It's just unbelievable, the traffic. You wonder how in the world we got along with two lanes of traffic, too,
right.
you know. Because now we have four lanes and they're filled up. It's hard to get in and out of the parking lot.
It is.
And,
it is.
So this is a town. The growth has just been something else. And the opportunity's there. Somebody wants to exploit it. But,
what do you feel, talking about that end of town, do you think your trade is a carriage trade? If it comes pretty much from this area? You mentioned people coming from other places for meat, maybe, because
right.
it wasn't packaged, but...
Right. Well, meat business is our big business.
Yes.
Yeah, Yost, as you know, that's really our big business. And there's not too many places where you could go in anymore and get that meat cut right as you want it.
Right.
And that's the reason we're attracting people from all over now anymore. It's not like it used to be, where we had a more or less a localized group of people dealing with us. We just have them coming from all over the city of Alliance, and so many people from Sebring and Beloit, and the way we know they write, you know, most people pay by check anymore. Of course, you'd just be amazed at how many people come there, and it's just me alone, I know that,
mm-hmm.
because they are so... Well, I probably shouldn't say this, but I have a gal that buys all her meat from me, and she said, you know, my father-in-law is with the chain store in Alliance here. We used to go down there and buy some meat because we felt that we had to. And she said, since they've been bringing this meat in from the warehouse and already cut, we just can't stand it anymore. So this is a one salvation that I think a small independent has right now. If they can have a specialized, especially good meat department, I think it there'll always be room for it. There'll always be room.
How did you get your knowledge of meat?
I just learned it by doing it. I knew a lot about the grocery business, and when I bought this store from Mr. Dixon up in Mount Union, I went in there, and he had a very good meat business, and I had very little exposure to the meat business before I went up there. And believe me, I had to ask a lot of questions. He stayed with me for about a week, and then I used to buy a lot of meat from Livers when they were in business mm-hmm. out there. I bought all my beef from them. I'd call up John and say, look, John, I got a question, you know. And believe me, those first few years when I was learning it, I learned it myself. But that's a good way to learn, because
yeah,
you never forget
that's
it.
Right.
You know? But
that's, right.
That's the way I learned it. I didn't go to school or anything. They have these schools for meat cutting, but I never... saw a graduate from one of those yet that could go right into a meat market
yeah,
and start
I'm
to
sure.
to do the job, because they could only teach us so much. And,
right.
But, you know, it's been a big change there, because you used to do all your cutting by hand with a handsaw, and now we mm-hmm. have, of course, the power saws and everything's production in that anymore, too.
Yeah, that's...
And but we still have a... We still have the people that come in and they want those special cuts, you know. They don't have to press a buzzer and wait 15 or 20 minutes to get them.
No, this is...
that's our salvation.
That's right.
Yes. We know it.
And I think, as I mentioned at the start there, I think it's the personality of the owners and the help that you have. I think this makes a big difference, too. And this is always accommodating and a smile, and you're cooperative, and this makes a big difference, Ralph.
I'm sure of that. Yeah. That's what we try to tell our people. In fact, I keep telling you that all the time, you know. And I have always had good people working for me.
I think so.
Yeah, we try to. It's kind of a thing where it builds, you know. You get two or three people that are nice and pleasant. Why? It just rubs on to everybody else. And it's an attitude that you build. We have a lot of wonderful customers. I wouldn't trade it for anybody in town. You know, we don't have those people that come in, harass you. We have nice type of people. But I think if you treat people nice, that's the kind of people you get to. Right. You know.
If you had to go back and live over again, you'd opt for this again with all the headaches and all.
Well, I probably would. I really like the business. You know, if you like what you're doing,
this makes a difference
too. Yeah. I went to college for 2.5 years, and I really thought I was going to come out and be an accountant someday. Uh-huh. But I ran out of money, came home, and I got the only thing I do, you know. So it's worked out well, you know, real well. I have no regrets about it at all.
Well, I know, speaking personally, we're glad you operated out there on State Street, Ralph.
Thank you very much. I had a lot of people tell me that. It's been rewarding that way, too.
Good. Well, appreciate very much talking with you and getting us down on tape, and we'll check back with you on it then.
Okay, fine.